Well, this morning, the lesson was Science Reveals Truth, which in part I'm taking from Lesson 8 of our course in Spiritual Psychology. So what we are doing here is to consider the scientific approach to truth and its revelation as to the nature of the universe. As we have in Psalms 19:1-2, the heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. And when we speak of this day to day and night to night, we're not just talking about as the sun, as the earth rotates, and we move away from the sun to the darkness. We are also talking about going within. The firmament is, in the beginning, they believed that it was just a bunch of stars hanging from strings and little things like that, the little display God put on for us in the evening. We've come a long ways to understand better that the firmament is all about faith. It is about that deep inner faith that is already working within us. And that there's so much more than meets the eye, even when we're looking at it in the physical. Because regardless, we can only conclude what we believe and understand. And that's the depth of our reality. See, man's great search has been twofold: to discover and define his relationship to a power greater than himself, and to discover the secrets of his own nature and being. The first concern has led to the development of religion, philosophy, and science. The second has, in addition, led in comparatively recent times to the development of psychology. Scientific progress. Well, let me back up on that a little bit. In understanding the Bible better, for me, has to approach it in understanding its psychology, which I find expresses simultaneously to the individual and also on a complete sociological basis. And I realize more and more these sages and folks of the day, philosophers and priests and so forth of the day, thousands of years ago, had a greater psychology and understanding of it than we've given them credit. And sadly, a lot of that had disappeared from our churches. So scientific progress and spiritual progress have common ground, for both require the humility to accept new idea, new data, new understanding, and insight. In both cases, also dogmatic adherence to outworn beliefs and belief systems undermines integrity and destroys progress. We get put into a little box of understanding, and we're not supposed to think outside that box. Yet, we are in the creation of that which is infinite, and we therefore are meant to think on an infinite capacity. We have the freedom to expand and evolve. We have the freedom to ask questions. We have the freedom to explore and discover. And in the idea of the scientist, of the true scientist, we remain open-minded and not become locked into our own theory or theological interpretation, but instead to be open to the idea of others and so forth, to be able to stay with my ideas or to enhance my ideas or to realize maybe my idea wasn't so hot in the first place, but it was helpful. It's time to move on rather than stay stuck. I've talked about the idea that sometimes that which was very positive and very helpful becomes purposeless. And suddenly it's like, wow, okay, it's a good thing, but it's not where I've evolved into. And so I need to let that go. And that can be a little scary, because that's like going into the dark hallway for a little bit and waiting for something new to come in. But if I stay in the old, when everything inside me is trying to expand, well, that's just torturous. And that's not what Jesus taught. Or for that matter, anyone that was in that direction. It's not what Buddha taught. It's not what the Tao teaches. It's not what any of these great teachings of the day taught. They taught us to evolve. And Jesus said, you can do all these things I do and more. I think that's called, you can evolve. Dare I say that he was saying, you can become better than the teacher. You know? But we lost so much of this. And we turned him into a deity. The flesh into a deity. And forgot that the word came to the flesh. The flesh is not the word. So when we put someone on a pedestal like that, we've already shrunken our beliefs, our ability to expand, and have turned God into something much smaller than that which is infinite beyond comprehension. Science is teaching man to know and reverence truth, and to believe that only so far as he knows and loves, he can live in a worthy way on earth and vindicate the dignity of his spirit. What we see externally are not the qualities of things in themselves, but the qualities of our perception of things. See, it's only my perception. I'm not seeing the absolute. When am I ever seeing the absolute? There's so much data to register at any given moment. Think of everything that exists right at this moment. And are you truly being conscious of the fan spinning, every single window, every beam that's in this building, the folks that are sitting here, the organ that's over here, the piano that's next to it, the bells that are ringing? No, we don't sit there and comprehend that all infinitely in one space and in one breath, but we're aware of it. But what is my perception of the moment? You see? And that's just in the physical world. The science of analyzing, explaining, classifying is only conscious of its limitations. So by intervention, science alters and refashions the object of its investigation. I remain open-minded. I allow myself to become more. The scientific world view has ceased to be scientific, a scientific view in the true sense of the word. The astronomer Sir Arthur S. Eddington observed, "It is difficult for the matter-of-fact physicist to accept the view that the substream of everything is of mental character. But no one can deny that the mind is the first and most direct thing in our experience, and all else is remote from that point. It's either intuitive or deliberate." Noting the influence of quantum physics, he added, a rather serious consequence of dropping causality into the external world is that it leaves us with no clear distinction between the natural and the supernatural. We have this ability to figure things out. We have this natural drive to look beyond the point in fact. It's called Christ mind. And it leads us to God idea. And we've been invited by God personally to know what God is. Certain words I've chosen not to say anymore, like, well, God works in mysterious ways, or God's mysterious. No, God's not mysterious at all. I'm ignorant. That's what it is. It's out of my ignorance that I would make a statement that God is mysterious. I prefer to say, I'm trying to get to know God better. There's a lot to learn. There's an awful lot to learn. But God is not mysterious. I don't want that word in my vocabulary. Because that kind of gives me the chance just to back off. He's just mysterious. I'm done. That's a tragedy. That's a real tragedy. When God's wanting to give us all that God is. And we're saying, no, you're just mysterious. I'm out of here. We have choices. How we want to perceive things. How we want to realize things. What is my reality? Because my reality, we could all be sitting in this room together and all have a different reality of what we're experiencing here at this given moment. And everyone would be correct. Another physicist, Sir James Jean, concluded that the whole so-called material universe consists of two kinds of waves. Bolted up waves called matter and bottled up waves called matter and unbottled waves called radiations of light. Current astronomers have noted that all visible things are, in a valid sense, condensations of light. Also, contemporary quantum mechanics affirms that everything consists of this paradoxically of both particles and waves, one or the other relative to how one chooses to view it. The world of light declared in Genesis 1:3 is therefore confirmed. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Scientists have been looking at something they call biophotons in the brain that may possibly prove that our consciousness is of the light functioning together as one. Now, this is outer science. This is not the sages. And most outer science today, physicists, a lot are concluding that the sages from 1,000 years ago were absolutely right in what they were practicing and what they knew, though they just turned inward. They weren't doing outer experiments and putting things in little containers, watch them bubble up and turn into smoke. They weren't doing any of that. They just went into the silence. And today's physicists of many are saying these guys, these men and women, were correct. Because they went within. So, this knowledge has scientists theorizing that the brain's neurons can communicate via light waves. They are seriously considering that there are optical channels that have the ability to communicate. However, they are still not sure as to why. You know, truthfully, our modules that have all the little electronic devices, little gizmos on it, you know, diodes and transistors, that are in all our devices, they're in our phones, they're in our TVs, they don't know exactly how some of those things work. They just know that they do work. You know, I remember when I went to electronics school, they were telling us, we don't know how this little capacitor is actually doing what it's doing to this diode over here. We just know that when we put it in there, that's how it works. So that's been proven. And that's happened over the years. We had, back in the day when we first were saying or proving the theory of gravity, there was some debate because out in the universe they're saying, yeah, but if gravity worked, this planet must be here and this one must be there. So there's all this gravitational pull. And there's this big space. And it says, well, maybe our theory isn't correct. When someone said, well, maybe, we don't have a telescope to see a planet that's out further from the other direction, that would be proportioned to making that gravitational pull work. 70 years later, we got a better telescope. The mathematicians were like, well, here's a planet. There has to be another planet right there. They got the telescope. What do you think was right there? The other planet that we couldn't see. And so to this day, the theory of gravity has remained intact. And what is the theory of gravity? It's God at work. It's what God created. God created gravity. Man discovered it. Man did not create it. So there's a lot of things that we do in any given day that we don't understand how it works. We just do it. You know? A lot of people don't understand how electricity works. How does that current shoot through that wire? Well, I don't know, so you know what? I'm not going to turn that light switch on. No, we turn on the light switch even though we may not understand how current exactly works. I don't think about it. It works. That's good. There's a faith that the light's going to turn on. You know? But as we understand these things scientifically better, then the knowledge of how it all works is better, and that's just a personal blessing unto oneself to understand better how the science of God works. Because then I can practice it better. You know. However, let me see. Sorry, I have some notes in front of me today. I usually don't carry notes. Now, scientists believe that biophotons that our brains produce, scientists believe there may be a quantum entanglement that works as a pathway. In other words, this could be the link where photons and consciousness operate in what is referred to as spirit. Through experiments, scientists now know that the human brain can transport or carry over millions of biophotons in a split second. Imagine, that's how our brain's working. I'm sitting there watching reruns and commercials. Meanwhile, my brain's shooting out millions of biophotons in the split second. There's something very alarming about that. Anyway, and talk about humility, something very humble about that also. The possibility that the brain continues to produce, the more neurons communicate, the more they are linked to consciousness. Given to that idea, there is a correlation between light, consciousness, and biophotons. Then there is more likely to be more of light than we are aware of. Often we see ancient pictures from Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Christianity, ancient Greece, and other forms of religious and sacred individuals with a shining halo around their heads, symbolizing enlightenment, a higher consciousness. Now, we found this throughout the world with people putting this light around people's heads. They didn't know each other existed. One didn't say, "Oh, I dig that guy's artistic expression. I'm going to use that too." They had these same realizations without even knowing each other and drew these things. Some people can just see these things. You know. Scientists are considering that the higher the consciousness, the higher level of biophotons, then the stronger intensity, hence the higher frequency and production of these biophotons. In other words, the greater the enlightenment, the more this moves and works through us. Since the brain produces light and consciousness is not contained but infinite, there may be something that many scientists still are overlooking. But they're really seeing this stuff and they're concluding that this is spirit. It's still the outer though, you know? It's still the light. It's still part of the outer. We might see it, not be able to see it because it's invisible to us, but it's still part of the outer. There's a lot of the outer that we don't see. Air is part of the outer. Don't see it. Might see it create movement. I know I can inhale and exhale, so it's there. But I don't see it. But it is part of the outer. It's not part of the inner, what we call the invisible. So the universe manifests infinite intelligence, perfect law and order, indicating that its source must be supreme intelligence, mind. In infinite mind is the will and the purpose to express its ideas and form. Thought is the creative medium determining that form. Eddington, again, who I brought up before, writing as a scientist, observed, recognizing that the physical world is entirely abstract and without actuality, apart from its linkage to consciousness, we restore consciousness to the fundamental position. The mind must be regarded as dictating the course of world building. Without it, there is but formless chaos. And again, we're created in image and likeness. God, from the invisible, created the visible, the heavens and the earth, all the things, the trees, the dirt, every speck of sand, everything, the plants, all the different life forms, the cells, everything. God created. But we do the same thing. We create our houses, our clothing, we build chairs and all kinds of wonderful things, statues and music and, you know, the arts and everything. It's all creativity. We're doing the same thing God does because we're in the image and likeness. If we did not do that, the world would be formless. We'd just see a bunch of, we'd see what God did and we'd still be sitting there, you know, staring at a rock. But we're so much more than that. The natural man develops itself according to principle of matter, but the wisdom of the Creator, not being in matter, the natural man, the brute, are governed by its own law or principle. But there is a higher and more excellent law of principle that matter knows not of. This principle teaches the scientific man that the matter of all kinds and descriptions in the material world is subject to his science or will, and man himself, as we see him, in nothing but the shadow of an idea that science can change at pleasure, just as man knows himself. So the death that we speak of is of the enemy to progression, for it keeps matter in the gross state and retards progression. It is the darkness the science has to wade through. It is the cause of all the misery. For it acts on science as the cold winters act upon the earth. It closes all the avenues of life or vegetation till the heat of summer bursts forth and life springs from a tomb. So error holds science in the grave of death till the trumpet of wisdom sounds through the pores of matter and quickens the soil and heats upon the earth. And that's Phineas Parkhurst Quimby. And you can find that on page 184 from Phineas Parkhurst Quimby, The Complete Writings and Beyond. So, to quickly conclude, divine science declares upon the omnipresence of God and the law of expression. Its fundamental truth may be stated as follows. God and God in action is all there is. God and God in action is all there is. And we are in that and of it, expressing from that as God is expressing in and of us. And as we have our individuality in doing so. So today, in part, this came from, again, Lesson 8, Science Reveals Truth. From Phineas Parkhurst Quimby, his writings. And then the last part was something that I came across when I was doing my dissertation to debate my argument about evolution of a divine nature. And I found that very interesting. So, let's close with a prayer. We give thanks. And we ask that we become more conscious of our true nature. That we understand the principle at work and the ability to practice in it. May we all have this scientific Christ mind that leads us straight to God idea in expression and teaches us how to live and have our being in a way that is loving, wise, healthy, and joyful. And to know that the absolute essence of this at work is to freely share every bit of it. And so it is. Amen.